With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Football Ramble World Cup specials in association with history. We've got five of these World Cup specials. We started way back in 1990 with Cameroon's incredible defeat of world champions Argentina, and we'll be finishing with a look at that time. A 23-year-old David Beckham was sent off for that little kick out at Diego Simeone in 1998. These five World Cup specials are brought to you by History, who, in celebration of the World Cup, are broadcasting 24/7 football documentaries for 2 weeks, starting on the 28th of May. Monday, the 28th of May. You can watch History on Sky, Virgin, BT, or TalkTalk. Gentlemen, this time we have the great Ronaldo's performance during the 1998 World Cup final. Controversy.
A man befitting of that music, of that epic music yes. at the start. If you could imagine Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo, picking up the ball inside his own half and driving towards a goal, if that music's playing in the background, I imagine that's the music that's playing in his head.
Now, that's how the music came about. The sort of the Earth's core and atmosphere just suddenly burst into that sound as he charged through another poor defence.
And that is what he did. Jorge Valdano, the sort of Real Madrid legend, said of Ronaldo, "He's not a man, he's a herd."
What a great start.
That was how he played.
Do you know what?
He was quite simply a great Man United player. Have I researched the wrong player?
Yes, you have.
Oh, no.
That is such a great quote.
Yes,
he's not a man, he's a herd.
And it's really important, I think. And it's an excellent quote, and there's a lot of truth in it. Not because he was more than one man, but because I think it's really important when we talk about the actual incident, which is very controversial and actually obviously a negative aspect to the great man's career. We should absolutely start, though, by talking about the type of player he was and what he was able to do as a player. I mean, because if you were creating a football player in a lab, I mean, we were talking about this before we came on. Marcus said that, you know, for him, he was, and I'm sure I'll come on to it, it was the first proper modern footballer, and everything you see since probably stems from him. Almost like a thoroughbred racehorse, but they can all be traced back, you know. Ronaldo, that's you putting that in my head. Ronaldo was a guy who he was the ultimate iron fist in the velvet glove. I mean, he had the power, the ridiculous power, the strength,
the pace.
And he was, for a man so big, and if we're going to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi being the greatest players of all time, which we regularly do, in terms of physicality, they're nowhere near.
No.
Ronaldo was by far a bigger physical presence than both of them.
And the skill the man possessed.
Well, and the skill for a man so big. I know we have a joke about good touch for a big man and all that, but the skill he possessed in a frame so strong and powerful was something to behold.
That is it. People that haven't actually seen much of Ronaldo play would look at his record and look at the size of him, even in the pictures, and probably assume he was a bit of a bully, bit of a sort of almost like a sort of flat track bully. But there was so much more to him than that. His feet, like he would do that sort of like that step over thing where he would do it at such pace that you'd have defenders falling over. And he was known for his fainting as well.
Yeah,
like which is such a specific thing to do so often that you become known for it. He had just absolutely everything
above the shoulder. Yeah.
The skill that he produced on the pitch in big games, you know, I can remember in the UEFA Cup final for Inter, I think they played Lazio, they won 3-0, and some of the footwork in that game, it's phenomenal, which is of course his nickname in Italy. And you know, and rightly so marvel at the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo and so on. But this man, for me, and Ronaldinho obviously came slightly after him, this man was the one who took the game to that next level.
Absolutely. Well, Marcus, sorry, I was just going to say, Marcus, give us a line for people listening who maybe aren't perhaps old enough to have seen him in his pomp. Describe the type of forward he was.
Blimey.
Absolutely complete.
Yeah, he could do absolutely everything.
There's not a modern comparison.
Frightening is what I'm saying, if you're a defender.
The love I had for George Weah Like,
yeah.
He's the greatest.
Well, he would be.
He's the greatest. Quite similar.
Yeah.
Very, very strong.
Yeah, yeah.
Scored similar, amazing, like, kind of take around templates and slight arms kind of goals. But then Ronaldo came and I was like, God, like, how do you even stop him? Like, how do you even...
Well,
like,
that's it.
You can't stop him physically. He's got the quickest feet in the world.
Yep.
And he can finish in through the tightest angles. So, like, name a better striker than that.
I completely agree with generation. You, Pete. What if you were an opposition manager, what would you say to stop him?
You can only double up. That's all you can do.
Well, absolutely.
I think I would go as far as to say... and. Because I think Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi are different players, obviously. I would say, I've written in my notes, look, I think he was the perfect combination of strength, skill, speed and technique. There was no weakness in his game. And I think he, quite simply, the best forward I've ever seen.
Easily.
And he could score every type of goal. He could pick the ball up in his own half and go around a lot of players, like Pete said, and score. He could pop up with a near post header, make a textbook run. His feet were so quick that he could score those types of forward goals at the top level they score with no backlift at all. His reactions were amazing. He was defensively very good in terms of holding the ball up. Great temperament. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he played the game like it wasn't really that important to him, although of course we know it was. Quite simply the best forward I have ever seen, and no one's really my experience. Of course, I haven't seen players who are older, but there's no one that comes close.
We spoke about David Beckham a couple of episodes ago, or last episode, I forget. But either way, we were I was sort of saying that great pass that he does for Real Madrid, just in front of Ronaldo. Like, you put the ball in front of Ronaldo from, you know, 10 yards, it's going in. It's going. There's just no option. And if you ever need an example of why he is loved as one of the greatest players in the game, modern or otherwise, when Michael Owen made a comment about his weight about a year ago when he was playing in like a charity match or something, the amount of abuse Michael Owen got,
even though Owen was right.
Yeah.
Here's what it does.
Yeah. He's a man carrying a bit of timber.
It doesn't matter.
Michael Owen is but a fly on that statue of a striker.
Completely. And as a not uncharacteristic misjudgment from Michael Owen.
Well, has Ronaldo ever won the FA Cup?
But, you know, and this event, this you know, really interesting event that we're going to talk about here, and obviously we're going into the build up now. This happened in 98, of course, and you don't have to take our word for it of how good a player he was. Of course, you can go and watch the replays of his games, but going into the World Cup, he was 21 years old, and he had already won the World Player of the Year twice.
96, 97.
Yeah.
And won the Ballon d'Or in 97.
He was also just off the back of a 34-goal debut season with Inter, which in Serie A at that time,
it's not too shabby. And of course, we'd seen him have one of the greatest seasons, one of the most blisteringly good seasons at Barcelona in 96 to 97. And as you rightly say, Jimmy, was at Inter. That season at Barcelona, it was, I don't know the words, you've run out, phenomenal. It was absolutely different class. Went to Inter and scored a ton of goals as well. But the tournament featured a Brazil side that many a neutral thoroughly enjoyed as well. This is the thing. It felt like the sort of the good times were coming back Brazil.
If you go back to the summer of 98, they were absolutely massive in the build-up to this final, to this tournament. The deal they've done with Nike, which maybe we'll touch on a bit later for other reasons, where they just taps into this idea that everyone loves Brazil, right? Mm-hmm. And I can only speak on behalf of being in the UK at that time, but the build-up to this tournament, it was Joga Bonita, it was the iconic Nike
Samba
advert.
Boys and
it
all
was,
that.
It was the...
Masquerade.
Yeah, this the signature boots that Ronaldo had, the R9 boots. Just the players they had, Rivaldo, Ronaldo, Bebeto was in there. Danielson was hugely high.
Dunga, Roberto Carlos, Leonardo.
Yeah. Roberto Carlos, of course, Dunga, Cafu as well.
Taffarel in goal.
Taffarel.
Come on.
It wasn't bad, was it?
Yeah, I mean, they were such a likeable side. Now, this felt a little bit different to the side in 94, of course. But just to go back... Well, not that we have to feel obliged to go back to Ronaldo. He's the main centrepiece, of course. Those R9 boots that he had, the sort of fancy silver, blue
and silver one,
yellow sort of streak in there. This was perhaps the first time that we saw the individual player celebrated and lauded up in a way that seems sort of fairly commonplace now. We talk of, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, to a lesser extent someone like Paul Pogba and so on, with, you know, clothing ranges or sort of boots and so on. But yes, that Brazil side was thoroughly enjoyed and hyped up and so on. But the individual, which is fairly commonplace at the top of the game now, perhaps that was where we saw it first with the great Ronaldo.
And I guess from our perspective here in Britain, like, they'd gone through the dark days of the 80s. We'd had a strong showing in 96. I think football was cool again, I think.
I know what you mean.
In many respects.
Yeah, it was. Definitely was. You know, the build-up to that...
It was toxic in the 80s, like in the late 80s. Wasn't
oh, yeah,
really
no one wanted to touch it. But in 98, I mean, it might just be because I was a massive football fan anyway, but yeah, the summer comes around. We're going to experience that in a couple of weeks when the weather gets warmer and we're all looking forward to a big tournament. But then it felt like a big deal. I mean, England had a lot of hope. Mm-hmm. Of course,
well, England were back at the tournament.
They were playing quite exciting football after missing out on the World Cup in 94. But Brazil were just the most marketable team, and they were being marketed very well by Nike at that point.
That Nike advert when they're all in the airport.
It's iconic.
If you've not seen that advert, YouTube it, you know, the Brazil.
You've been living under a rock if you've not
it's
seen that.
It's so delightful. Mm. It's utterly delightful. But they were different to the Brazil side of 94, who were much more functional. And some of the people in Brazil, I mean, I love this, how they can pick and choose which world champions teams that they like that came from their country, but it wasn't a particularly popular side in terms of how they played back in Brazil.
My Dunga went mental.
Indeed he did, but he was back in 98. Now, to be honest, they probably hadn't had a bit of that samba spirit since 1982 with that great Brazil side there who failed to win the World Cup. So you have to go all the way back to 1970 for a side that played the game, well, really...
Well, it defined that idea, really.
Indeed, absolutely.
Well, 1970 team essentially, you know, defined basically with a closing chapter to a type of football that after that it was very difficult to play.
82 they got close, but 98 was a kind of like a hang on, here we go.
But in 70 they were able to combine this perfect combination of effectiveness and beautiful football that has sort of given way since then to this idea, and however small. But there is always a functional element to football now. And I think Jonathan Wilson might speak. It might be Jonathan Wilson who said quite articulately that, yeah, that was the last time that this idea of boundless, enthusiastic, optimistic, skillful football would, without any really any sort of fear for the function of it, would ever be played. And it just so happened that Brazil was so good in 1970 they were able to win it.
Absolutely right. So with all those aforementioned players and Ronaldo up front, this team was expected to win the World Cup and win it with a bit of style. They were missing Romario, sadly. I think he was injured, who was one of the heroes of 1994. But they started their campaign against Scotland. Now, having said all that...
A real test.
They laboured to a win against Scotland. And actually, we said, you know, what does an opposition manager say? Well, Craigie Bruin found a way to keep out
Ronaldo.
Don't
score an own goal, Tommy Boyd. might be what he would have said.
Very specifically, do not do that.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny because Brazil did the early running and Cesar Sampaio, a player who kind of put his name on the international stage or made his name on the international stage, put Brazil 1-0 up early, and then Scotland did equalise. And I've said it before on the Ramble, I'll say it again, that story Kevin Gallagher told me when I interviewed him, that this sums up that Brazil side well. Before the kickoff, the kickoff was delayed because the opening ceremony ran over. So Scotland said, right, we're going to have to do shuttle runs up and down the corridor near the changing rooms and so on. And he said there was a door, a little window you could look through and see the other side. And what could you see the Brazilians doing? They were all just dancing away and samba and so on.
Recreating the advert.
Exactly.
Almost.
That's just how much confidence they had with each
other. That advert in the airport was actually a documentary.
Yeah, they just happened to be filming
it's when
at the
they
time.
Turned up. Yeah.
Indeed.
Couldn't do that nowadays.
No.
Not in an airport.
No.
But it was the second game against Morocco where Ronaldo scored a lovely one after 9 minutes, thumping the ball home. Rivaldo opened his account. There was another great player who made his name in an international sense, perhaps, at that tournament. I know he played for big clubs and so on, but slightly different even in the 90s. You know, not every household had the internet and so on and so forth. So really the world certainly realised how good Rivaldo was. But they beat Morocco 3-0, and that's when they started. That's when they were playing with a lot of confidence. Beto scored. And in that game, Jim, you talked about the Ronaldo step over at such speed. There's a great example of that when he sets up, I think it is Bebeto. And then in the knockouts, they played a good Chile side that had Marcelo Salas and Ivan Zamorano. Brushed them aside 4-1.
Two great footballers. Two great forwards. Yeah. Chile were, I mean, they weren't quite as good as a team we saw in a World Cup or two ago, but they were decent enough.
But it was a good...
They beat England at Wembley, didn't they, Chile, around that time?
They did, and they were unlucky not to beat Italy in the group stages, of course. Ronaldo got a brace, obviously. obviously, and then it quarterfinals beat a good Denmark side. I know that sounds slightly patronising, but it was a decent Denmark side. That was when Roberto Carlos tried that ridiculous overhead kick clearance. They went straight to Brian Laudrup, who gobbled it up for 2-2. But they came through it. And then in the semi-finals, they played, I would argue, one of the best Netherlands sides in recent years, for my money. And the goal Ronaldo scored in that match was classic striker stuff. He saw the ball. He saw the ball was on. He made the run, held off the defender, Philip Cocu, who experienced canny player, slotted past the keeper. In a more subtle way, it showed his power and pace in that moment for me.
Yeah, because one of the things he was really good at was controlling the ball in a sprint.
Yes.
And with close control at a sprint, which is a very, very rare thing. And that was a perfect example of how he could use that sort of that specific skill in a flash.
Definitely. Absolutely right, Jim. And they had to go through on penalties. Ronaldo took and scored Brazil's first in the shootout. But they did, and they were in the final. And they'd been wonderful to watch throughout, and they'd got to the final, and even when it went to penalties against the Dutch, everyone just thought, well, they'll get there.
Yeah, but it's the Dutch. So, well, they're the only team comparative to England in terms of penalty shootouts.
Are they? I think England are still out on their own.
Maybe the worst, but they're second worst.
Indeed. And then, of course, we come to the final, which we're going to talk about after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to this World Cup special in association with History, where we're looking back at Ronaldo's performance in the 1998 World Cup final in France.
And if you like chat about France World Cup 98, why not check out The Three Musketeers, a documentary film about Ronaldo, Zidane and David Beckham, which is available Tuesday, 29th of May at 9 p.m. on History.
Absolutely. Now, they're in the final against hosts France. In some ways, pretty perfect final matchup, the tournament favourites against the hosts. Both had looked pretty impressive. I mean, the French looked good, even though they couldn't find a decent sort of top draw striker. They had a bit of a problem in that department, but their defence was so airtight and the midfield was so solid and creative, it didn't really seem to matter too much.
The back four was a vintage Frank Leboeuf, Marcel Desailly, one of the all-time greats, Lizarazu was a brilliant left-back, and Lilian Thuram, who was fantastic as well. Yeah.
That is just different gear.
With that Deschamps in front.
Yeah, I mean, you're not getting... Well, and to back that up, in the whole tournament, they only conceded two goals, a Michael Laudrup penalty in the group stage, in which a match they'd already gone through, and Davor Suka's goal for Croatia, who finished top scorer, of course, in the semi-final. Two goals they conceded.
The build-up to this incident we're going to talk about now is that It came to everyone's attention. From what I remember, the kickoff was in the evening. It was the World Cup final kickoff
in
the evening.
In Paris,
it? Yeah, and so the team sheets come through, and the first everyone knows about it is that Ronaldo, the best player in the world, the name on everyone's lips, the player that the type of player in those days where even if you didn't like football, you'd instantly know who he was. By far the biggest name in world football. He's not on the team sheet. And the BBC particularly, who are covering it, they lose their mind, the BBC.
Well, I think everybody did.
Yeah. But I remember Motson particularly.
Motson did. Well, but Motson was in the commentary box, of course. But there was no talk of Ronaldo being injured beforehand. This came out of the blue, which is, of course, it was out of the blue, what certainly happened. The BBC studio, they couldn't get over what was going on. They went to John Motson and he said he'd never witnessed anything like it in his career. And the scenes were, I quote, absolute mayhem.
The Brazilian media were going mad, obviously.
Well, of course, because why not? There was no reason for this.
Can you
Edmundo,
just sitting at home and watching in Brazil? Oh, they're going, right then, come on, World Cup final. What the fuck?
Yeah. You probably already hate the team because they're not up to your standards.
Yeah, I mean, I would have loved a pundit to go, well, for me, that makes sense. He's not done enough for me in this tournament. Yeah.
It might be in the Alex Bayos book about Brazilian football, but it might be maybe Tim Vickery's work or something. Someone said around that time, looking back on it, they were in Brazil watching the game with an extended Brazilian family. And when the team sheet came out, it was like a morgue. So that people just had no idea how can this be possible? They had no idea. And it wasn't a case of, you've got to remember, put it in context, it's 1998. People aren't Twitter searching Ronaldo's name and saying, oh, he looks like he might have picked up a knock in training.
That's right.
There's no
there was no talk
information
of that.
Come out. It's the most, in that situation, at that time, in the context of the football we're talking about, that's the most unthinkable thing that could have happened.
Well,
we've
spoken about Roberto Baggio, and when Baggio played in that World Cup final, people were aware that he was carrying a little bit of an injury.
Right.
So you were aware of a few bits and pieces. Not a word had been said on Ronaldo's fitness or state of mind or otherwise. That's why it came out of the blue. And Edmundo was in the starting lineup as well, instead of him. Now, David Ginola said that after the game, you know, years on, he said that some people in France thought it maybe was a bit of mind games from the Brazilians.
Mm. Right. Well, I can see why. I can see why.
There was an awful lot of rumours that as to what had happened, and I'm sure some of us have heard a few. Now, Gary Lineker interviewed Ronaldo years later. Now, Ronaldo said he had a convulsion after lunch at the Brazilian team hotel and was unconscious for 3 or 4 minutes.
Mm.
Out of the blue. And he still says no one knows why.
Mm.
Absolutely no idea. No particular reason why he had this fit.
Well, the custom was they would go, before a game, an evening game, they would go for lunch. And they would go back to their rooms. I think they shared in twos. They go back to their rooms, have a nap and relax, whatever they want to do. Paul Gascoigne apparently was fond of table tennis.
Tennis.
Why do I always say table tennis?
Because you think it's so ridiculous, you must
edit it.
But Paul Gascoigne obviously wasn't in the squad. And Ronaldo has this convulsive fit. And I think Cesar Sampaio helps him. Roberto Carlos is involved. Mm-hmm. They call the medics. And he has to go to hospital for another test.
Well, and that's it. He's not playing.
Like one of the medics in tears, apparently. Coming out of.
Well, they said
they actually deny that. Interestingly, there's a lot of different sort of stories.
Some of the conspiracy theories are amazing. One, that it was some kind of weird. Obviously, the night thing we'll probably come on to. But then also there was a big kind of betting thing and all of and that Ronaldo was marking Zizou. And it's like, if you're going to do a conspiracy theory, don't like do it on one of the other greatest footballers in the world. It's really hard to mark him anyway. Yeah, to be honest,
that's right.
And Ronaldo sort of said. I don't know who was supposed to be marking Zizou, but he didn't do a good job.
No, that's right.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, because I mean, so at this point, Ronaldo's had a convulsion. He's gone to hospital for tests. At that point, clearly, Mario Zagallo, who isn't exactly a small name in Brazil himself, by the way, he's big enough to make these decisions because, having said that, a couple of decisions he makes subsequently were perhaps a little bit questionable because it threw him. But clearly, he's a manager who's looking at a squad of players and saying, fine, he's my best player, and he's the best player in the world, but he's on his way to hospital. What do you want me to do?
Well, he said,
I'm not going to pick him.
Zagallo said, right, we're not starting with Ronaldo. Edmundo's going in there, so they prepared for that. Ronaldo left to go to the hospital, and then they went. The Brazilian team left the hotel to go to the stadium. Ronaldo's at the hospital. He may not even get to the stadium later. So off they go, and Zagallo said, normally when they go to games, they're playing music and they're having a lovely time. It helps keep them relaxed and in good spirits and whatnot. He said there was no music. It's a very solemn atmosphere. So already the confidence is kind of gone there. Certainly on the wane.
Not great preparation, however the match goes.
Well, certainly not. Then, of course, they get to the stadium. The team sheet is handed in. And then it's kind of like, whoa, what's happening? And then another team sheet is handed in. And Ronaldo's name is on there. And you think, that's not a mistake. Nobody, the names aren't even similar. Do you know what I mean? That's not a mistake that someone goes, oh crap, yeah, I forgot he was going to start instead of Edmundo.
I forgot the most famous footballer in the world.
Exactly.
So it's not like Stuart Pearce picking 12 players, is it?
So this was such big news in Brazil that they subsequently had like a legal or a civil hearing, and they talked about the different things that could have gone on and how it happened and what they can learn from it and all the rest of it. And a lot has been made of this commercial deal that Nike signed with the CBF, the Brazilian Football Federation, across 10 years for a sizable amount of money. And I'm tempted to say that these days it's probably not that much of a big deal, but it was quite ahead of its time at the time. And one of the things it was focused on was it gave Nike the right to organise, I think, 50 friendlies across the 10 years in which each game, 8 first-team regulars must play.
Yes.
Now, the conspiracy then expands out. So this is the most credible conspiracy, if you like, and I don't believe in it, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but this is the most credible one that's done the rounds. Now, The reason this doesn't ring true for me is because Nike are a sportswear company who know that players get injured. Mm. So they're not going to insist, because people would suggest that the reason the team sheet was handed in again with Ronaldo on it is because someone from Nike, some shady guy in a Nike business suit, said, Ronaldo's got to play, you've got to play him.
They do business suits.
Yeah, well, apparently, yeah. Apparently, yeah. And that doesn't ring true to me because, like I say, they must know that players get injured. To me, it's fairly obvious what's happened. And I'll give
By the way, 2 years after the final, a political inquiry was opened up on the whole Nike thing. Did they pick the team? And There was no wrongdoing found.
Exactly.
So we have to say that.
Okay, fair enough. To me, what's happened is, as I've just said earlier, Zagallo can't pick Ronaldo. He's on his way to hospital. Ronaldo subsequently goes to the hospital, goes through the tests, passes them. No one really knows why he's had this convulsive fit. Clearly, it's the biggest game of his career at that point. He's going to want to play. Mm. He comes back in time and says to Zagallo, I'm playing, I'm fine.
He goes from the hospital to the stadium, by the way.
Yeah.
It was mad, isn't it? So, World Cup final.
So Zagallo's obviously not going to say...
A rod less travelled, really.
Yeah, exactly.
It's usually the other way.
Yeah, he's not going to say, oh, you're the world's best player, you're not playing. He's going to say, you've passed the test, fine, you're telling me you feel fine, you can play.
But it's so close to kickoff.
That's actually Ronaldo's side of the story, isn't it? Yeah. Apparently a lot of the players themselves were a little unnerved, thinking we just saw him, you know, effectively swallowing his own tongue and frothing at the mouth. Should he be playing? So that obviously unnerved the camp. But what I find really interesting about this is the story around this game and this incident is that we don't know what the story is yet. Ronaldo's given his side of the story. Yeah. This is on public record. We supposedly do know what's happened, but it was such a mystery that even with an explanation, that mystery endures.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Incredible.
You're right, Jim. And I think that.
But are you not personally satisfied with the story that, as it stands? Then is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, you have to be, but you can as satisfied as one can be without having witnessed the whole thing firsthand.
I mean, it
does massively add up. And Ronaldo had a crappy game because he had a seizure and he spent all afternoon in the hospital. It's hardly the most ideal preparation for a football match.
Well, exactly. Yeah. It knocked all their confidence, you know.
He was bedding down Ronaldinho.
But Leonardo said the way Zagallo had organised the team that afternoon was with Edmundo in mind, and he said, including how to defend set pieces and corners and so on. Now, he was quick to say that that's not why they lost the game, and it wasn't like Ronaldo was marking Zidane and so on, but it does cause an element of disarray. There's absolutely no two ways about that. It was awful preparation. The game was effectively lost before a ball had even kicked.
I'm not saying it didn't. It massively affected the team and the final. And that's not to take anything away from France, who were a good team and were at home and, you know, were probably a better chance to win it, all things being equal, than anyone thought. Mm-hmm. But it will be... While I personally don't have any issue with the explanation given, I think it adds up. To suggest that it wouldn't affect how the team played is nonsense, because it obviously did. And we've seen, you know, and you've got to be careful as an Englishman criticising Brazil's approach to football, of course.
Well, they didn't even have a warm-up before the final.
But if you look at, how it affected them, which it clearly did, and you look at how it affected them in 2014 with Neymar being injured and how badly they dealt with that, you do sort of almost come to a conclusion where they might care a bit too much about this. Mm-hmm. And it's so important to them that they're almost paralysed and unable to make the right decision because it matters too much to them. And another piece of evidence I'll give towards that accusation is the fact that Zagallo lets Ronaldo play 90 minutes and later says, despite the fact he's walking around like a zombie, he says he wanted to take him off, but he knew the outcry back in Brazil would be too great, and so he couldn't contemplate doing it. And to me, given the performance he puts in, I mean, that is absolutely ridiculous. My instant reaction reading that, and I know it's easy from the sidelines, but my instant action was, I think they'd be happy, a bit more happy if they won the World Cup.
Yeah, but I just think the best course of action possibly would have just been a substitution appearance.
I agree.
I know he would have got pillied, but there's a story behind
it.
He was frothing at the mouth. He went to hospital. That's not
but
a fit player for me. So, but if anyone's going to be an impact sub, you may as well have the greatest footballer and give him, you know, 20 minutes. The game might have been lost by then, you never know, but you're giving yourself the best chance, really.
I think you go the other way. I think you start him and then you sub him off after half-time or at half-time, and if people say anything, you say, well, did you see him play?
But
what do you want me to do?
But this all actually feeds into what Jim was touching on earlier about being slightly unsatisfied by it all, because why was this kept a secret for so long? Or why was it all... Would you not, after the game, say, well, the problem was the preparations were all to pot and, you know, he had a seizure and all the rest of it. He wanted to play.
I think that ties in with the thing you were talking about at the start, though, the power of the player and the brand. And the brand that, you know, is kind of like indestructible at football and stuff. I think that's what comes into it after the,
You don't even have to say seizure, though. If you're worried about getting into the weeds about trying to explain, because obviously there are many different types of seizures and all that. Yeah, you did say, look, unfortunately, he's got an injury. You've seen how he's played in the first half. I had to sub him off.
But this is it. Like, and I agree completely with Pete. You've picked Edmundo. That's your man. That's how everyone's setting up shop. That's how you've organised. Ronaldo comes in last minute and says, "I'm sorry, can I play?" Well, sorry, you'll be on the bench. Yeah. So there's a strong chance you can come on. And had they have done that, I don't think they would necessarily won or anything or played particularly better. But they would have been a little bit more.
And for a footballer, you trust players around you, don't you? And you trust when you give someone the ball, they're going to do something with it.
Yeah.
If you see like Ronaldo walking around like a zombie, that's going to affect you. Well, he was our plan A, B, and C. What the hell are we going to do now? Yeah. If he goes off, you're like, well, oh, crap. But if he comes on, at least you can look to the bench and see. Ronaldo sitting there going, well, at least we can bring him on and he might be able to do something. I think that's a more hopeful situation for any football.
It feels like a decision that was made by the heart rather than the head.
Oh, yeah.
We've got to make a quick decision now that he's declaring himself available. Screw it. Let's throw him in there.
Definite fear coming in there, isn't it?
The performance itself from him was so strange, wasn't it? He didn't look like he was injured. It was an almost like ghostly performance.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
he did almost score, to be fair.
Yeah, he did. He hit the ball at Barthez, though, didn't he? Who catches it.
That's how good he is, though. Yeah. He nearly scored, even despite all that. Well, fortunately, though, we saw Ronaldo lift the World Cup 4 years later and win the Golden Boot at the 2002 World Cup. Even then, he wasn't quite the same player because of injuries. He's still probably the best player in the world.
Scored eight in that World Cup. Scored against everyone apart from England.
Two in the final.
But that's the thing, Jim. You're absolutely right. It shows how good he was, and yet perhaps we'll never have known just how good he could have been. Do you know what I mean?
There's a positive end to this story, because if you watch the interview you've already mentioned with Gary Lineker, he talks about the day of the final in 2002, which Brazil obviously go on to win, and he scores a couple in the final. He said he couldn't stop thinking about what had happened 4 years ago when he woke up, and he didn't go to sleep with all the other players in the afternoon because he was too scared. So he asked Dida, the goalkeeper, to stay up with him, who stayed up with him all afternoon to make sure it wouldn't happen. Wow. Which makes you feel like really sorry for it for him, because it's obviously affected him psychologically. Yeah. But based on things he said since then and the events that transpired, it looks like he's been able to put that to bed now. And it's a nice luxury being a Brazil player, isn't it? Because, 4 years' time, you've got a brilliant chance.
You'll have another go. Well, he was back in the Brazil side at the 2006 World Cup, and they didn't. I think they were knocked out in the quarterfinals by France. But he scored his 15th World Cup goal at that tournament, which made him the highest scorer of World Cup goals in history. Miroslav Klose overtook him, getting his 16th closest, scored 16, of course.
Enemy of football.
Indeed. But Ronaldo, he did it in five fewer games. So, a better scoring ratio. You've got to hold on to certain things.
How many club goals you got? Closer.
That's right. Indeed.
But I mean, really, when we're talking, and I've got nothing against Miroslav Klose, but when we're talking about comparing those two forwards, Miroslav Klose is very much a pub quiz answer there.
Indeed. Thierry Henry said this about Ronaldo. He said, Ronaldo did things nobody had seen before. He, together with Romario and George Weah, reinvented the centre-forward position. They were the first to drop from the penalty box to pick up the ball in midfield, switch to the flanks, attract and disorientate the central defenders with their runs, their accelerations, their dribbling. An absolutely incredible footballer who will be remembered for the rest of time. Absolutely.
And it's a testament to how good his career is and has been, and how good a player he was, is that this event we're talking about here, his performance in the 1998 final, is not this event that defines him as a player. Mm-hmm. And given that it was a World Cup final, that tells you everything you need to know about how good he was.
That's right, although he didn't score against Scotland.
Another legendary advert featuring Ronaldo when he takes around all players and scores, and they used one of his most famous goals, his most iconic goals for a club side, for Barcelona.
Oh, yeah.
Against Compostela.
Against Compostela. Mm-hmm. And he leads the defenders into Compostela. Yeah,
we watched that, didn't we, on a ramble years ago. We worked out, I think there were seven fouls in the build-up, and he still scored.
Absolutely. absolutely marvellous. So there we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to this Football Ramble World Cup special in association with History. Our five World Cup specials are brought to you by History, who, in celebration of the World Cup, are broadcasting 24/7 football documentaries for 2 weeks, starting on Monday, 28th of May. You can watch History on Sky, Virgin, BT or TalkTalk.
And don't forget, you can catch up with FIFA Films Presents France 1998 on History on Tuesday the 5th of June at 7 p.m.
Marvellous stuff.
Don't miss it.
Absolutely
was,
right.
Was the French mascot a cockerel?
Yes.
Yes.
Good.
Lovely.
Va va voom, Peter.
I mean, for the World Cup, he was like a dancing cockerel, wasn't he?
Yeah. I don't remember, but Jim seems to... Oh, no, I do remember. Red and blue. Yeah, I do remember, yeah.
Of course he was. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much to all the chaps here and to you for listening. We'll see you next time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.